Hello, welcome to this bonus edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. Fresh off Cincinnati beating Xavier. How are you feeling, Matt?
I am exhausted. My voice sounds really froggy, so that's cool. And I'm not going to sleep tonight, so that's awesome. In short, I'm fantastic.
Kind of an unusual shootout because it, A, featured a lot of points, and B, featured a big second half comeback by the Bearcats. First half, pretty much summed up by Trayvon Blewett going out of his damn mind. Scored 24 points in the first half? Something insane.
I think it was 24 points on 11-11 total shooting, like six threes.
Including a ridiculous three at the end of the half where Jacob Evans knew the play and then he still hit the shot like right in his face.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those moments where it's just like, what can you do? He's making ridiculous shots. And it's not even that he was making, like, the last one was ridiculous, but they were just generating wide-open looks at will. I would like to politely disagree with Len Elmore and say that if your defender is sprinting at you full speed with his hands up, that's not a contested shot.
26, 8-8 shooting, 6-6 from 3, 4-4 from the line. Flip that around second half, 14 points on 4-7 shooting, 3-5 from each three in the foul line for Blewett. Went for 40, which was the most scored against UC in Fifth Third Arena, beating Malik Wayans of Villanova in a game I don't remember.
No, I remember that game. I hated him. I hated him before that game, and then I really hated him.
Blewett, the biggest story, I think, just because he went just like ape shit. But flipping on the happy side for the Bearcats, who put down a 50-point second half, outscored Xavier 50-34. Jacob Evans and Jerron Cumberland really carried the load in the second half. But Evans 12 points, Cumberland 13, Copain tossed in 10, Washington 9. And that was pretty much all the scoring for UC. With Nasir Brooks throwing in 4 just to fuck with the Xavier front line, which had an absolutely terrible game.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's been the weakness of theirs all year. I mean, let's be real. If Sean O'Mara is the solution to your problem, you have a problem. Because he's the only big they have, and you can't play him. He can't switch. He can't really defend that well. He is thoroughly ground-based, so he's not going to provide any rim protection despite being 6'10". Yeah, I mean, like, the Bearcats got to the rim at will whenever they wanted in the second half. Like, they just had nothing for it. And it stopped for about 4 minutes when they continued with the 1-3-1 zone. But when the starters came back in, because for the most part, they switched to that 1-3-1 when UC had almost all backups in. And Cumberland wasn't fucking around with that shit. Like, he just put his head down, beat McCarr off the dribble, and just took it to the rim time and time and time again. When the starters came back in, they struggled a bit to find a way into it. And then eventually they were just mauling them on the glass too much that they had to switch out of it.
Yeah, to that point, layups, Cincinnati 10 of 16 on layups, 1 of 2 on dunks.
Washington, I love that dunks. You're mentioning this. Please, please tell the good folks at home what Xavier shot on layups and dunks.
1 of 2 on dunks, 3 of 18 on layups for Xavier. Like, absolutely nothing inside. Bernard, 0 of 2. Gaston, 0 of 2. He didn't score the entire game, which was a pretty big blow for Xavier if their front line was going to do anything. Gooden, nothing. Makura, 1 of 4. O'Mara, 0 of 2. Sumner had a completely terrible game. He went 0 for 7.
Sumner was shit.
0 for 7. foul trouble the majority of the game. One for seven, 6 points. The Bearcats defense the second half, just absolutely backbreaking. Xavier ended up shooting 39.3% for the game, 27% the second half. Tremendous defense.
Absolutely. They really turned it off on in the second half and really shut off all the lanes of penetration. They finally stopped switching on Blewett, which turned up like half of his open made threes in the first half was needless switching. Evans just basically got in his hip pocket and didn't leave him. And at that point, he was silent for 10 minutes before he made a late three. They completely took him out of the game. It was just an absolute domination of an X team that is no doubt talented, but they have there's no balance to their team. It's all perimeter based. So, it says a lot about you if you can have a game where you shoot like 50% from three and you don't somehow end up being the highest effective field goal percentage in the game. Like, that's a bad look. Like, if you're making that number of threes, you would expect, like, average production from the rest of the floor. And they were miles and miles below that.
Yeah, like, the only other option Xavier really had was Makura. He got his 13 on 4 of 11 shooting. And really what he gave you on offense, he had his soul taken on defense, trying to guard Jaron Cumberland, who probably ends up being the story of the game, was Cumberland's the electric second half after subbing in for Kevin Johnson around like the midpoint. 12 minutes, 13 points, 5 or 7 shooting, 2 of 4 on 3, 1 of 4 at the line. Just not great. But we'll get to the free throws in a minute. 15 overall points for Cumberland.
Yeah, we're going to end on free throws because we always have to send you out on a depressing note, so we're going to stay on brand here.
And then, like, you get, like, solid performance, like Washington 3-3 from the field the second half. Evans, 4-10, 1-4 from 3. Copain scored 10, most at the free throw line. He did hit the back-breaking 3, which had to feel so good for Troy. Wasn't exactly a pretty shot, but it went down, being the most important thing. And it was the 3 that broke Xavier's back, ended their comeback hopes. And really had to feel good.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was the shot we've been bitching about Troy taking all year, because percentage-wise, yeah, step in, walk up threes, not Troy's game. But that one went in, so that's fine. I'll throw the stats out the window. Yeah, I mean, like, this was just an incredible game. Like, there was about 5 minutes left in the first half when UC is still staying in touch, despite Blewett being ridiculous, where I had the thought, and I think I even tweeted it, Xavier fans should be really nervous that Blewett is having this half and they're only up 5. Because usually when you have a half like that from somebody, it's part of an avalanche, where you just bury the team and the second half becomes, you know, elementary. Yeah, it's just kind of an exercise at that point. UC went in the half down 8, saying, except for letting Blewett go off, we played pretty well. And they were, that's not just hyperbole, they were playing very, very well. But, you know, to only be down, you know, 8 points at a half when their effective field goal percentage at that point was like 76, you'll live with that in those circumstances.
Yeah, Xavier definitely was living right the first half. Getting, like, not really breaks. I mean, like, Blewett just out completely out of his mind. And UC did a really good job on the other players. We mentioned Sumner had a miserable game. Like, he did get guys' shots, mostly Blewett. But then, like, you don't really don't, like, they're inside guys. Like, they get nothing from Gates, nothing from Gaston. Gooden off the bench didn't do much. And really, like, That was it. That was Xavier's offense. Like, Jones was able to get to the foul line a couple of times. She, like, got Clark in foul trouble. I don't know why they had such a hard time covering Jones, since he wasn't, like, actually good. But it seemed like he picked up, like, 8 fouls and he only played 12 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was just kind of weird. Like, he got in good positions and, you know, there was a couple kind of ridiculous passes that found him, but...
And he was kind of fortunate that he would be in the game when Brooks was in the game, and Brooks had all 4 of his fouls in 7 minutes in the second half.
Hey, man, you can't take him with you. Can't take him with you.
Yeah, Brooks, like, we mentioned, like, we, like, dwell on UC's bench needing to give him points in minutes, like, solid minutes. There you get 15 from Cumberland, 4 from Brooks. Had a couple of blocks, a huge block in the first half. Like, that huge game-wise, but it was impressive. Left-hand block. And he nearly outscores Xavier's front line by himself, which, if you had that as a key to the game, you were some sort of crazy, insane person. But you
if you had that as a, if you had that as a key to the game and you bet on that, congrats! I do question some of your life decisions.
Brooks, on this plus-minus, Brooks in his 12 minutes was a minus 16.
Oh, that's rough.
Justin Jennifer played 3 minutes, 3 unfortunately timed minutes, where he was a minus 8.
See, yeah, that's funny, because you're looking at the plus-minus. I'm looking at the offensive rating. You know the highest offensive rating today?
Who was that?
According to... SAAC's hoops, 234.5 is Justin Jennifer's offensive rating. Now, I'm going to say at some point that's going to be adjusted down, because I'm pretty sure that's the upper limit of what that can be. I don't think it's possible to have a higher offensive rating than that.
I don't think it is either.
Yeah. It's like quarterback rating. There is a theoretical limit to how good a quarterback you can be.
It's kind of weird since he didn't have like anything in the box score.
Very strange. I don't know what to make of this. How can he have an offensive rating that good but a game score of minus 0.4?
That must be some sort of glitch. A glitch.
It's got to be. This has got to be adjusted later. What will not be adjusted later is Kyle Washington's offensive rating of 66.4. Holy shit!
Yeah.
Wow, that was not good.
Plus minus, a game changer. Plus minus 28. By far the best on the Bearcats.
For Kyle?
Yeah.
Wow, these are weird numbers.
He played the minutes at the beginning of the half where they went on their monster run.
That is very true. And he did play some crunch time, which we didn't think we would see again. So, cool. Yeah,
a large part of it was because one of the big... not one of the... But the key to the game ended up being second chance points. You see, with 19 offensive rebounds, 30 second chance points. Like, one of the first times this season, you see really cashed in on all their offensive rebounds. It's been, like, kind of like one of their flaws. It was like, they'll get a ton of rebounds and not an impressive number of second chance points. But they killed Xavier, especially in the second half, where the Musketeers just couldn't keep them from scoring, like, at really any point.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the second half, I never thought that I would say this about a shootout, but the second half was played so much faster than the first half. Like, the first half felt fast because of the Blewett insanity, but it actually was kind of pedestrian in terms of pace. They really ramped it up in the second half, and it was wholly to the Bearcats' benefit. I have not seen a Mick team run in a big game this often in, I'm going to say ever. I'm sure there's a game out there that someone can remember, and will tell me about, and please do tweet me. That's fine. But yeah, like, he unleashed the dogs of war in this game, and it was freaking fantastic to watch, especially like to see Cumberland, you know, Gary and Jacob Evans in full flight time and time again. More of that. Where can I sign up for more of that? Can I get that? Yeah, I will sign that petition. I might even donate.
Yeah, like, where do we check that box?
Yeah, I will gladly take the running all the damn time box. Yeah, let's just go for that one.
Gary, kind of a weird game. Opening the game on fire, like doing pretty much whatever he wants. X really tried to put him in weird matchups where they would throw like Blewett at him, or even like Sumner, try to hide them on Clark. And it didn't really work very well. He scored 11 first half points, had a couple of assists. Second half, he didn't really score, only 2 points, but he had 8 rebounds, 4 on the offensive glass. Just another thing, just keeping possessions alive, getting the offense going. Really solid game for Gary Clark, even if it didn't stand out as much as it could have, at least scoring-wise. 13-11, and, 3 assists. Like, pretty solid.
Yeah, and, like, he's playing out, like, fantastic basketball in the last, this is like a 6-7 game stretch now where he's not really, like, his usage rate is still way too low for a player of his caliber and his ability. But the way he just kind of controls things from the top of the key as a secondary playmaker is just, it gives the Bearcats another facet through which they can play. And, like, that is, bar none, that is the biggest difference between this team and all of Nick's previous teams. Because previous teams didn't have this option. Like, there's never been a player like Gary playing for Mick. Like, you can draw comparisons for how he's playing and, you know, what kind of impact he's having on the game all around as a rebounder, distributor, defender, you know, playmaker. But usually those guys play for other schools, and we watch them and say, oh, shit, I want that. Can we get one of those? Well, we got one of those now. And it's really just fantastic to watch because he can dominate a game without scoring, without consuming possessions. He doesn't need, you know, 20 shots to get 20 points. He might not get to 20 points, but he's going to do other shit.
So lately, it seems like he won't get to 20 shots in, like, if you combine 3 games. Which, like, he doesn't really need to on this team. Which is kind of a blessing in one sense, because you at least know you can rely on him. And, like, you have, like, Washington. It's like, he's not afraid to shoot. And then you have your, like, friends and Copain.
We're going to circle back to that, but continue.
Let's talk about Evans. Team high 21 points. Almost like a quiet game, because he wasn't like incredibly efficient. 7 of 16, 3 of 9 from 3, 4 of 5 at the line, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks. Simon UC was making their comeback. It was a lot of him controlling the ball. And as you mentioned, like, he and Cumberland, just for a while there, just running straight at X, because they had nobody who could guard the paint. And Evans and Cumberland really took advantage of it, and it was pretty great to see. It's like one of like the minor knocks I think you can put on Evans is sometimes he'll just like casually hoist up the mid-range jumper. Even he did a couple of times in the first half, but the second half is like Mick must have said, like, take the ball inside, and he did a lot to a lot of success.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is kind of the real difference in this game compared to previous shootouts is that, you know, X always had answers for the one guy you had to take out with UC. They could always, you know, Mac's a good coach. He's not elite of the elite, whatever. But he was always very good at scheming a way to minimize the impact of the best player. For the last couple of years, that's been Troy. He's not had a good shootout until this one. He's 0-3 in that. Those factors are related. But with this team, like, you can't do that. You can't slant your defense to do one thing to take away one guy, because there's four other guys that can hurt you. And Evans was a beneficiary of that today, because their strategy was to double relentlessly in the post. And anytime Gary or Kyle got a touch on the block, double was coming. Didn't matter. Always. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And, you know, we'll circle back to Kyle. But when Gary was in there, you know, he's an adept passer. And the main beneficiary of that in the first half was Jacob Evans, because he would, you know, he would get the ball at the wing with the guy sprinting him for a closeout. And that's kind of a perfect situation for Evans, because he is so quick and shifty that he can take that one dribble pull up and it's money in the bank every single time. And he got that shot time and time again. And then in the second half, that kind of went away, because they stopped doubling. And they played a little bit more straight up one-on-one. That didn't mean that the double wasn't coming. It was just they were trying to meet him at the rim rather than actually doubling them on the block. And that kind of changed the complexion of the defense, and that opened up new opportunities for UC. And, like, I've not seen quite as many, you know, cross-lane slashing driving kicks from a UC team in a long time. And Evans knocked out a couple shots that way. Cumberland knocked out a couple shots that way. You know, it was just good, solid offense. And they had answers for everything that Xavier wanted to do. Even the 1-3-1 zone, which fucked them up for a bit, they figured out the solution to and just kind of pounded them inside on the offensive glass until they had to switch out of it.
Yeah, that, you mentioned the double teams. And for the first half, even for most of the second half, you see Wood kind of just pound the ball into the block. And then Xavier's double team would come, and it seemed like sometimes they really didn't know how to handle it. Especially, like, whenever they would double Washington, especially, not to pick on him, but it would be every time he put his dribble down on the block, you could bank on Makura or Sumner or...
Oh, absolutely.
Or Blewett, whoever, coming up from the top down. And it really kind of messed with Washington, and he ended up doing a lot of his damage off of offensive rebounds, especially in the second half. But then UC started, like, getting Clark out on top of the floor, which was pretty interesting. And he would have some drives where he would put the ball on the floor and try to make Xavier guard him. And they had trouble with it.
And yeah, I mean, like, they just have no solution to Gary at all. They haven't for 2 years.
To your point, it was pretty interesting to see UC just abandon, like, get running through the post. It's like, you can't imagine a Mick offense where they don't... With, like, even the guys they have on the floor, like, most of the time, like, you can
where they don't aimlessly,
yeah,
where they don't aimlessly pound the ball up top so that we can get Nysir Brooks a post touch. It's like, that was a running joke for years with us and with other people. Like, that has been a thing for a while. That's not a thing anymore. Like, that doesn't happen often. The only time it happens is when Kyle's in there. And that's because Kyle's going to get a bucket most of the time. He's going to get a couple turnovers because he just straight up barrels into double teams. Like, he's not even aware that they're coming. He's like, he turns over his shoulder. He's like, oh, shit, what? Where'd you guys come from? I thought there was only one of you. Fuck. Clank.
And that's Washington's credit and the whole team's credit. Only 8 turnovers.
Which is amazing. And this should be, like, I really am praying that this is the end of the Mick obsession with turnover rate, where you have to play in a slow, deliberate pace, because otherwise you're going to turn over the ball over, and turnovers are bad, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, turnovers are bad. But there's also something to be said for taking advantage of the talent you have. And this is a team full of dudes who are amazing on the run. And the most amazing of all is Jerron fucking Cumberland. My God. That dude's a freaking freight train. I know, like, he's a freshman. That is not a freshman. That is not, like, he moves like something else. It's crazy.
Yeah, that was one of the talking points from earlier in the week. Was what's Cumberland going to do? If you're not going to win.
He's going to go off. He's going to destroy JP Makara's soul. That's his now. He owns that.
Yeah, 9 field goal attempts. Like most of them, as you mentioned, just burling to the basket where he was 3 of 4 on his 2-point shots. Got to the foul line 8 times. I'm pretty sure we're about to talk about that in a moment. But besides like the 1-3 where, like, oh my god, he shot it from nearly in front of the UC bench, and I don't think, like, it seemed like he barely hit the left side of the backboard. It was such a terrible shot. Like, it may have been one of the worst shots he's ever taken in his entire life. But, like, you can deal with
hey,
one of them.
But that was, like, the third three he had taken. That was the last three he took, actually, right?
I think it might have been.
He was 2 of 3. He was feeling it. I don't give a shit. Like, confidence. It's so seductive. We haven't had a dude that is just like this. Like, he is so confident. It's crazy. Like, he is confident beyond his age and years. In November and December, he did not move that fast. Like, I'm not saying he got faster. I'm saying he's always been this fast. But, like, for whatever reason, the synapses in his brain were firing fast enough, or he wasn't quite seeing what he didn't trust what he saw, so he wasn't sure that he could go full speed. He was full speed today. And, like, if he puts his head down and he gets by you, there is nothing you can do. He is getting to the rim.
It might be an
and one, but he's getting there.
Yeah, he seems like one of those guys where it took him a little while to, like, really learn the speed of the game, especially against the more top-flight competition. It's like when you
Iowa State and Butler, he was a no-show.
Yeah, and it's like he was like comfortable against like the garbage, like Fairley Dickinson and I don't know, like Brown. Like he could put up numbers against them, but even then, like he had more points against Tulane, but this was by far his standout game.
Yeah, I mean, like he straight up took the game over for 5 minutes,
and put Kevin Johnson on the bench, which is something that kind of seemed impossible.
Which is something that Kevin's going to have to get used to.
And which, something should say, Kevin kind of did to himself from when Blewett hit one of his threes in the second half. He took a terrible shot, and then he followed up by taking a terrible second shot, and then I think he went right to the bench.
He had one of the worst 2-minute stretches of his career, which... I'm sorry, KJ, but that's an accomplishment. He had two terrible threes that weren't even close. He had, I think, a blown layup. He also had a steal and a run out where he carried the ball because he got too excited, like a Labrador, like just a really excited puppy. And he also had one where he went for a steal on Blewett. This was early in the second half. Went for a steal on Blewett. Completely overcommitted, wasn't even close, didn't even touch the ball, blew it wide open 3. It's like, how, you're a senior, how are you still making this mistake? The odds of you getting that steal are like 2%. And that guy literally hasn't fucking missed.
I think the more encouraging thing is like just how we've seen Mick kind of massage Washington's minutes. He did it with Johnson, and I think that going forward, like, that's pretty important that at least he's willing to do that, because just, like, look at the last couple of games, like, the SMU game, he played almost the entire game. So, like, just seeing, like, Mick not being afraid to stick one of his seniors on the bench is in a pretty tight game the whole way. I think pretty nice move.
It's like no shit.
Like, look what Cumberland was doing. But we've seen guys on the bench who were playing well before.
See, but this move didn't happen tonight. Like, that happened 2 weeks ago. And we hoped that it would carry through. And I thought it was part of, like, a pseudo lineup of death where you just go Gary in the middle and 4 guards. No, I think it might be. Like, that's a look. That's an option. That's something that you have now. But it's just that Cumberland is over Johnson. in the pecking order, and he should be. Like, he's not a great defender. He lapses, you know, like, he has space outs, but so does Jacob. So does Troy, for that matter. Like, you can survive him. And he does so much for your offense. Like, what was the last time UC had a guy off the bench who could come in, change the game for 5 minutes? And do it by, not because he's just hitting ridiculous threes, a.k.a. for Rod Cobb, but by putting his head down and getting to the rim whenever he wants to. That's new. That's different.
That's like, you have to go back to what, like, freshman year Sean Kilpatrick? And that was a long time ago.
Yeah, like, early SK drove all the time. Granted, he only drove right ever. No left.
But like, even Cumberland is, like, but you don't want to say, like, more advanced, because SK had a bunch of good games as a freshman. But he's, like, kind of, he's, like, right up there. Like, you would say he's, like, one of the best six men in the Cronin era, for sure.
Oh, for sure. And, well, and then here's the difference. SK was 21 years old when he was a redshirt freshman.
Yes.
Devon is still 18 and looks bigger than SK now. And SK is an NBA player.
Yeah, Cumberland. It's like, man. Because, like, Xavier doesn't have, like, small guys. Like, Makura is, like, 6'5". And so, like, blew it.
He just abused him. Like, time and again. It's like, it's to the point where I started to feel bad for Makura. And then I saw his face and I stopped.
You feel bad for him until, like, he has that three that, like, some, it goes, like, 4 feet in the air and, like, rolls in. It's, like, unreal shot.
That's bullshit.
Actually, one of the keys to that, one of, like, the key stretches in that game, UC had, what, like, a 6 or 8 point lead. That kind of a weird foul call on, I believe it was Brooks, that put Makura to the line. He hits 2 free throws, then he came down and made that 3. And that's how we ended up in that one possession game stretch. The free throws on both ends, the officiating was suspect, to say the least. A lot of fouls in the second half kind of really ruined some of the flow. Xavier goes to the line 16 times in the second half. UC goes to the line 21. Pretty much Xavier's entire offense in the second half consisted of whatever threes they could make and them just not missing free throws, period. Well, you see, 11-21 from the foul line in the second half, and we're 7-16 in the first half. Combined 18-37, 48.6%. Really, the only reason this game wasn't a double-digit blowout was because UC was unbelievably
dreadful,
atrocious at the
dreadful
line.
Dreadful from the foul line. Like, I'm used to UC teams being shitty free throw shooters. Like, it's just, like, that's clearly not something that Nick spends any time on. Like, like, I'm sure these guys shoot 100 free throws a day. But, like, they're just not, it's to a man, they are not comfortable on the line. You look at Xavier's guys, they get the ball and they just kind of pop it in. They don't really give a shit. Like, they don't give it any thought. It's just kind of, it's muscle memory. Like, UC's guys have, like, 10-second routines that are intricate and detailed, and all these serves to put more pressure on themselves to make the shot. It's just, I'm convinced that that's not the way you, having a 10-second routine is not the way you shoot free throws at a high level.
And you don't want to pick on guys who had solid games, but like Kyle Washington, 4-14. Drawing Cumberland 3 of 8, like those guys, 7-22 combined, really dragged that average down. Cause most everybody else was okay. But Evans 4 of 5, Copain 6 of 8, Clark 1 of 2. Kyle Washington on the season drops down to 60%. Versus the tier A B to B teams on KenPom, 15-31. That's pretty much every good team UC's played against, like the against SMU, Xavier, Houston, Butler, Iowa State. He's 7-21 at the foul line. Unreal.
He's got some John Lester shit going on.
I think Elmore actually, his rare good point was his free throws. His free throws have so much weird backspin, and he shoots them so hard that it seems like a wonder he makes one.
He's well, I think that's
60% of the on the year.
Go yeah, ahead. I think that's Cumberland's issue with his free throw shooting as well. Like, he's got a weird release, but it's effective. But that doesn't mean it's not weird.
Yeah.
So that puts odd spin on the ball. Like, it's just, like, he's never going to get a shooter's roll. Like, he might get a shooter's carom 10 feet up in the air and straight down. That seems more likely than just a gentle roll back into the hoop.
He's at 63.6%. And it seemed like a big part of, like, Xavier's strategy was, like, yeah, if we foul Washington, we foul Washington. We don't really care. And, like, we just, like what Kyle, like, in conference play, 12 of 15. Like, not a ton of attempts, but, like, so much better than, he pretty much shot all his conference free throws tonight and made four of them, which is probably closer to his true free throw shooting talent.
Possibly. When was the last time you see got to the line 37 times?
It had to be a long time.
It's got to be ages and ages and ages. Because
go ahead.
Last year, they didn't go to the line at all because they launched so many ill-advised threes. Like, generally, you don't get free throw attempts when you launch threes with 40% of your shots.
Just simple math that a lot of people really did not understand when you pointed that out last year. Like, yeah, the reason UC doesn't go to the line is because they shoot a ton of jumpers. You don't normally get fouled on jump shots.
No. Not unless you're, like, really good at faking. Unless you're Dwayne Wade. You're not baiting people into that. KJ thinks he's Dwayne Wade. That's why he loves the pump fake so much.
UC on the year 64.7%, which is in the which ranks 305 on KenPom.
Hey, that's kind of where I thought it was.
Opponents, guess what the opponent free throw percentage is against UC?
Like 74.
74.8%, which is one of the unlucky smirks in the country. That's 341 out of, 350-some-odd teams.
Well, it's a good thing they don't foul, except for the last couple games.
Yeah, 341 out of 351. So, their free throw defense, not very good. Normally not smart when you foul people who are good at free throws.
That's bad strategy.
Which, unfortunately, it seems they are want to do.
Yeah, I mean, they have some iffy shit every once in a while. The one thing, one other thing I want to touch on this game is, like, when we talked about Xavier's offense and how it was greater than the sum of their parts, and you brought up the crucial point with them, which is they just don't have any drains on the offense. Well, tonight, UC didn't have any drains on the offense. I mean, Kyle Washington had the lowest offensive rating according to KenPom at 83. Everybody else was 100 or above. You can live with that because you know Kyle Washington's not an 83 offensive rating guy. Like, he just had a bad game. And he missed a fuck ton of free throws.
And he was giving it back to you on defense, which, as much as, like, we kind of rag on him, is, like, really impressive. Like, 12, 8, 4 blocks.
The blocks were impressive, for sure. Yeah, I mean, like, I thought this would not be a game for Kyle. And it turns out I was wrong on that. So, he just killed him on the glass. The offensive rebounds alone were just... I mean, he didn't play nearly as many minutes as Gary did, but he still put up 3 offensive rebounds. I think that's where all of his field goal mates come from, except for one, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Still packed in the dunk, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, it's just a really tremendous game offensively for everybody. But we even got to see Tobler time, which was really great because the end of that game lasted forever. And it was nice to see Mick just throw Tobler in to do it, to get him on the floor in that win.
I mean, okay, we can pretend that that was to get Tobler in a cross-down shootout because he's a senior. Come on. We're adults. We know what that really was. That was a big middle finger to Mac and everybody else. You don't put your walk-on in with 0.5 seconds left if you're not sending a message at some point, you know? Like, it's not a very subtle one either.
That is, in case you didn't stick to the end, that's when things started getting chippy. Brooks fouled, blew it with like under a second to go. Actually, there was a couple more fouls, but like that one especially, Brooks fouled, blew it. And then like UC and Xavier's players start yapping at each other, and then here comes Tobler. It's a nice way to switch the perspective.
That's the message that, yeah, we're done here. We're just done.
Yeah, big game for the seniors. Nice to see them get the win over Xavier that had eluded them.
Forever and ever.
Especially Copain, who hadn't had like a great history against Xavier.
No, it's not been his game. It was tonight. It was Jacob's tonight, but or Jaron's. But it was good to see. Like it was good to see those guys finally get the win.
Yeah, and it was good to see Copain at least the one, like hammering the nails down, getting Xavier out of town, zipping up that body bag.
There, yeah, that was clever.
You see, 11 in a row. It's going to be 12 in a row when they defeat South Florida over this weekend. How far do you think this streak can go off the top of your head? And to totally jinx this so they lose to South Florida, who always plays them incredibly tough no matter how shitty South Florida happens to be.
Yeah, SMU is the only team that can nab. Like, if this group plays like they played tonight, like with that kind of level of intensity for the entire 40 minutes, nobody on the schedule is beating them. SMU can. Theoretically, Houston can if Rob Gray just goes full blew it. But yeah, like there's. I mean, you look at the away games. At Tulsa, at SMU, at South Florida, at UCF, at UConn. Are you worried about any of those at this point?
You do have to be worried about SMU. They could never lose at home.
This is true. But SMU's got a brutal stretch of games, if my math is correct. And they play... Like everybody else in this league, they play six people. Like, that's going to catch up to them at some point. And if it's not mid-February, when is it going to be?
Also a fair point. Last 4 years, SMU has lost 3 conference home games. One of them to Cincinnati a couple of years ago. One of them last year to Tulsa, which got Tulsa in the tournament.
Yeah, thanks for that, SMU, you bastards.
But yeah,
just looking at the schedule, SMU is the one you circle. And, I mean, UCF's intriguing. Like, they are, because Taco Fall can, like, swallow the earth, and that includes the 5 feet around the rim. And that's kind of important for a team that's streaky shooting. Yeah. But they don't have offense. They don't have that thing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an interesting one, too. Especially like when you go to South Florida at the end of the season. So, as you mentioned, like, going on the road in conference play is hard for everybody for a reason. Because, like, you mentioned playing 40 intense minutes. And, like, that's one thing to do against Xavier. It's a complete other thing to do at Tulsa or at UCF. Or even, like, at UConn. It's like, these are college kids. They're not pros. And focus, like, wanes and other teams make shots.
See Sunday, January 15th. The East Carolina game. Where UC played, I don't know, like 10 real minutes, 10 hard minutes, and that was enough. But the 30 other minutes were just a train wreck.
And UC's like road record this year, like the game at Iowa State, nice win. Definitely not one you would hang on the mantle. Lost to Butler, the close game to Temple, which turned out to be kind of a worse performance than we even probably imagined then, given how Temple's shaken out. The win at Houston, which was pretty solid. The East Carolina game, and their only like big go-away win was against really crappy Tulane. So you like them to take care of business, and like they should. But like you can't be really overconfident. But at the same time...
if this team shows the level of focus that they showed tonight, they should roll through this schedule. Like, going to UCF... Sunday, February 26th, that's theoretically an interesting game. But, I mean, the way things are going, the conference might... Like, they could already have the conference decided at that point.
Yeah, because, really, the conference title swings on that game at Moody on February 12th.
Wouldn't it? And it's done.
SMU is the only other team that would have a chance. Like, just a quick look at the conference standings. UC 7-0, SMU 8-1, Tulsa 5-2. So you go on the road to Tulsa next week, which I'm sure we'll talk about next week. And Tulsa coming off a road loss at East Carolina, which I guess shows how seriously that they deserve to be taken.
Not.
UCF coming off a couple of losses. Memphis, even for as kind of decently as they've been playing lately, they just like got beat by double digits at Temple, which of course is a hard game, but they already have 3 conference losses themselves. And they come to Cincinnati, so even if like they turn their ship around, they haven't won. They haven't really won on the road in league play.
No, and they're not going to.
That's a really like... The SMU game really stands out, as long as you don't trip up twice. You'd have to trip up twice to lose the league.
So if you beat SMU, like, if you win at Moody, you have to lose 3 times in the remaining 6 games. Go ahead, find me 3 losses. At South Florida versus Tulsa, Memphis at home, at UCF, home to Houston, at UConn.
It really is like you have to try to squint to see 3 in there.
I mean, I can squint and see 1. The probabilities say the only game that's under 70 is at UCF. The rest of them you see would be a prohibitive favorite in all of them. Like, it really is, win at Moody, you win the conference. And you got to remember the SMU's coming up against the bulk of their schedule. Like, their road in is a lot harder than ours. You know, they go at Tulsa, at Temple, UC at Moody, at Houston, at UConn, home to Memphis. Oh, and Tulsa's in there. I mean, that's a much tougher road to hoe.
It definitely is. Especially going on the road. Going all the way cross-country to Temple and coming back for a Sunday game against Cincinnati.
Yeah. I mean, like, SMU's good, but it's just... Isn't there playing like six guys going to hurt them at some point? Like, that has to. They can't keep doing this the entire year and not get punished for it. It just defies logic.
Well, even then, they just played pretty much five guys played the entire game against UCF. So, like, maybe there's a way they can get through it, but probably not.
Yeah, I mean, like, you see weird things on their KenPom page. Like, their depth chart over the past five games. Point guard, Shake Milton, 95% of the time.
Jerry Foster was injured and he didn't play, so like, if he's out an extended period of time, you're kind of in trouble.
Yeah. Like, their margin is razor thin, does not describe it. It's like micron thin.
But
you don't know what a micron is, it's the point of a fucking atom. Like, that's how big it is. Like, if they step off that atom, everything falls to hell.
Foster's dealing with a concussion, so really, like, you don't want to try to project too far, but who knows how long it will take him to get right and get healthy.
They're, like, at this point, they are seriously going to run out of people. Like, they'll have guys on the bench, but I mean, at this point, I expect the coaches to just be like, yeah, we're going to play with four on some Hoosier shit.
Yeah, their weekend off could not have come at a better time for them.
Yeah, they had to have it. Like, they are the walking wounded at this point.
But let's preview South Florida very quickly. And the preview is this. Is South Florida the worst team to ever play in the 4 or 5 years of the American Athletic Conference?
Are we going by ratings? Because I'm going to say they're probably the worst rated team. And I will also say they're objectively the worst team.
I think that that they are. Ever since they fired their coach, they've lost by... See, they lost by 11, 14, 19, 15, 6, 22, 12, and 21. So, yeah.
There. Yeah. We, on this podcast, we often mention the fine work of KenPom. If you do not happen to be lucky enough to have KenPom, one of the neat little features of his site is... When you look at a team's profile, the stuff they do really well is in green, and the stuff that they do badly is in red, okay? And, like, if you do just kind of average at shit, it's gray. South Florida is red everywhere, except for two-point field goal percentage allowed and free throw percentage allowed. Those are green, which is bad for South Florida.
Well, they're 2-point percentage allowed, while great in the non-conference when you're playing like Kennesaw State, has gone up to 48% and is ninth in the league. They're the worst team at giving up free throws. They're the worst team at guarding the 3-point shot. League opponents shooting 40% against
them. Pick your favorite stat. They are the worst at it.
And if
we're wrong on that, we apologize, but it's probably true.
The only thing their defense does is make the other team hold the ball for a long time. The average possession against is 17 seconds, which is probably bad because they don't offensive rebound well.
No. Here's the other problem. Their go-to guy section is Jamal McMurray. Jamal McMurray is no longer a member of the team, so that's problematic. So, yeah, like, you should not be overly concerned with the South Florida game. If your significant other wants to go do something fun, like, I don't know, see a movie. You heard good things about Manchester by the Sea. This is a good Sunday to do that. You're not going to be missing much.
Their lone offensive player with a season-long offensive rating of over 100, which 100 is average, is Luis Santos. who was conference only offensive rating is 93.5. Quite the precipitous fall off for Mr. Santos.
I'm not used to seeing win probabilities in the single digits. And they have five of them.
So I think this is about as great a comprehensive South Florida preview as anybody could ever ask for.
Did we hallucinate them going to the tournament, or did that actually happen?
That actually happened. They went to the tournament, and then they won two games.
I wanted to forget, but yeah. Now I remember.
They nearly went to the Sweet 16.
That seems like ages ago. That doesn't seem like this world.
It really does. It seems like it might as well have been like 30 years ago. And it was five.
God. Jesus, what happened? Stan Heath stuff? Yeah, Stan Heath stuff.
And then the coach they wanted to hire lied on his resume.
Slight problem. He still has his job.
The coach that they did hire did not do a great job.
Did not do well. No, he did not.
And ran off pretty much all of their good players that he inherited. And
he had a couple of those, and they just like, I don't like you.
And he ran off all the players that he recruited. So a pretty great combination of bringing in nobody and losing everybody.
So if you don't recruit and have no continuity, it's bad. Oh yeah, I have vague recollections of this, like circa 2005. So I empathize, South Florida fans. I really do. But man, this is bleak.
Yeah, they're watching all their good players do well for bigger programs.
Go Gators.
One last time, Cincinnati beat Xavier. Can't stress that enough, because, fuck Xavier.
Fuck Xavier.